This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkel. The American Civil Liberties Union is at it again, this time suing the state of Mississippi over the passing of the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act. The law simply provides protection for individuals, religious organizations, and private associations with deeply held religious beliefs from being forced by the government to violate their conscience. The state and its leaders have continually stood up to the bullies of the left. Just this week, they passed a bill pulling taxpayer funds from Planned Parenthood. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant joined Tony with the latest on the lawsuit.
Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, glad to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, good to talk with you, Governor. And this week, the ACLU, on its face, it looks like a frivolous lawsuit. I would assume that you guys are going to move to have that suit thrown out.
Well, of course we are, Tony. And, you know, this is the ACLU doing what it's always done, or at least for the last 50 years, is attacking conservatives and Republican leaderships. It's nothing really more than an extension of the Democratic National Committee. And so they file a lawsuit. They use the donations that they get from Hollywood and other areas to pay expensive legal bills to challenge the state of Mississippi. And this lawsuit, they actually filed as the defendant, the Registrar of Vital Records. Now, think about that for a moment. Here's a lady who is doing her job filing vital records, nothing more than a repository for records of the state of Mississippi, birth certificates, marriage certificates, those types of things. She is now being sued. She's now being attacked by this powerful left-wing organization, simply because she is filing documents that deal with marriage in the state of Mississippi. So they didn't sue me. They didn't sue the legislature. They sued a lady who is simply just doing her job as a state employee, and I'm sure doing a very good job of it. But again, to try to drag us into a federal court system that they know in large part is sympathetic to their causes, cost the taxpayers of the state of Mississippi more money for simply doing, as you said, trying to defend the First Amendment rights from an overbearing government upon businessmen and clergy.
Governor, the ACLU, what are they alleging? What are they asserting in their lawsuit?
They are asserting that clerks who now will have a religious conscientious objection to issuing marriage license, that we will protect them from the state of Mississippi. So they're saying that, again, we're in conflict, as best I can understand, with this federal law. Although our law says if you conscientiously object because you're deeply held religious views, you must find someone else to complete that marriage certificate without delay or interruption of the marriage. So
right.
We even have a remedy in there that complies with federal law. They are saying that's enough conflict for them to file a federal lawsuit and demand that this law be overturned simply because we allow one clerk, perhaps in an office or more, that has a deeply held religious view to say to someone else in that office, would you complete this task? I feel uncomfortable doing so, but without delay or without interruption. And apparently their lawyers thought perhaps if we find the depository, the lady at Vital Records that is receiving that document, we can sue her. It baffles me what they think their grounds are or what they think this wonderful lady, I'm sure that's doing her job at Vital Records, what relief can she offer? She's doing her job. She's filing records.
And this is not...
It makes no sense.
And this is not based on some case where someone was denied a marriage license. This is all this is all fictitious. It's all made up. It's alleged that it could happen. And let me just quote for our listeners what the law actually says. As you made reference to, nothing in this act shall be construed to prevent the state government from providing any benefit or service authorized under state law. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. They have to be accommodated, but you're simply accommodating the religious beliefs of those that are under the jurisdiction of the state so that they cannot be punished by the state.
And their political subdivisions. If a city, and we have some very liberal administrations within cities here in Mississippi, as we do across the country, and if they say, if you are here not providing that service, we're going to take your business license away from you, we might fine you. And so to protect those people, we pass this law, and it's very narrowly and properly drawn. We had hoped to avoid, we think, any serious lawsuits. But again, the ACLU, they're raising money off of this. I'm almost certain they're probably sending out letters saying, help us fight Mississippi.
Probably have your picture on it.
But I hope they have my, I hope they use a good one. Because that will be a badge of honor. And Tony, I can tell you, we are going to pursue this. I hope our Attorney General, who is in the Democratic Party, I hope that he will vigorously defend this. We've got other attorneys who are calling and saying, let us help and be a part of this, because they know that in any, we think in any reasonable world, it'd be dismissed and we could go on and bring the law into effect the 1st of July. We've been sued before the law goes into effect.
Governor, we're almost out of time, but I want to transition to another issue. You have been moving there in the state of Mississippi, along with the legislature, to end this forced partnership between taxpayers and Planned Parenthood. And it you know, the left is hoping when they attack you that you would just be quiet and go away, but it looks like you're not.
No. And that's exactly what they do. They think they will attack us and we will bow our heads and go quietly into the night. And we're not about to do that. You're absolutely right. I signed into law today a bill that will say that, well, I'm sorry, yesterday. I've had quite a number of bills come across my desk reviewing them. But it says simply that we will afford no taxpayers' dollars to these types of clinics, whether it be Planned Parenthood or use any other name that you would like to, where they are, for convenience sake, performing these abortions and using tax dollars to maintain that clinic and the people who work there. And so we're separating ourselves. Not one more dime, not one more dollar will go to any type clinic, a type such as Planned Parenthood organizations, whose main goal is to go about performing abortions, and if we've seen just recently, go about harvesting the body parts of these poor children.
It's long overdue, and I hope other states will follow your lead. Governor, always great to have you on the program. Thanks,
Tony,
for being with us today.
Thank you so much. God bless.
You can find out more about Governor Bryant when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann joins us to talk about revelations that the administration lied to reporters about Iran. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
One of the questions I often receive from our listeners is, what can I do right here in my community to make a difference? The answer? A lot. And one of the most effective ways to make a difference right where you live is by organizing and leading a culture impact team in your church. A culture impact team, or CIT, will help keep the members of your church both informed and engaged through a wide variety of tools that we can place in your hands. Go to cultureimpact.org today for more information and order a culture impact toolkit. We can provide you with all the training and materials you need to keep your church informed, inspired, and engaged. It's all free, and we can send it out to you today when you visit cultureimpact.org. Invite your friends at a church to join you in setting up a culture impact team. We want to help you answer the question, what can I do to make a difference? So visit cultureimpact.org or call us today, toll free, 800-225-4008.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. The New York Times did a profile piece on President Obama's Deputy National Security Advisor, Ben Rhodes, and it doesn't seem to be going away. In regards to the press, Mr. Rhodes stated that the administration created a, quote, echo chamber in the press in order to sway public opinion, specifically related to the Iran nuclear agreement. Rhodes went on to discuss what type of reporter the administration targeted, stating, quote, "The average reporter we talk to is 27 years old, and their only reporting experience consists of being around political campaigns. They literally know nothing," end quote. Will the admissions come back to haunt the Deputy National Security Advisor? Former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann joined Tony with her insight.
Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me on this important topic. I really appreciate the chance to be here.
Well, and by the way, welcome back to the United States. I know you've been over in Israel on a trip, and I think there was some interest, I think, on this story over there as well, because Israel obviously is, they weren't real happy about the Iran nuclear deal.
No, they weren't happy about this at all. And yes, I just returned yesterday from Israel. I was there for 2 weeks this time, and I met with a lot of very interesting people when we were over there. And the opinion of people in Israel is, how quickly can we get Obama out of the White House? And I talked with people who were on the far political left of the spectrum, who you would think would be in sync with Obama, but Israelis, whether they're considered on politically conservative, analogous to our conservatives in the U.S., all the way to the political left, are fairly much in lockstep in that they cannot believe the policies that Barack Obama has put forward. He has lit a match in the Middle East. And, of course, when we were there, I was on the Lebanon border, which now Hezbollah is continuing to be very active. There's also concern about tunnels going from Lebanon into Israel and the 200,000-plus rockets that are Iranian rockets that are aimed at Israel. And, of course, we heard and saw, as you did, Tony, the active fire that was occurring in Syria. There were, I think, 41 killed one day when we were there in the Damascus area by some Russian bombs. And then, of course, down in Gaza, I was down in the Gaza area about 2 miles from the border. Prime Minister Netanyahu went down because the IDF had discovered yet one more tunnel. As a matter of fact, another tunnel was discovered while I was there. These tunnels, again, are paid for by Iran, and the effort is to have incursions and killers coming into Israel from the Gaza area. So there's very much an active threat against the Jewish state, and Israel is having to act singularly to prevent those threats, because clearly from the article that you're referencing from the New York Times, it is very clear that President Obama and his very young staff at the White House are crafting a nonsensical view of the world that bears no relation to reality. And yes, the article essentially has White House staffers boasting that they were deceiving not only the American public, but they were deceiving the press corps. They were manufacturing experts to continue to put forward these deceptions about the Iran deal. But I think even more base important to this story is the fact that this Ben Rhodes, who was effectively a co-president in running the president's foreign policy initiative, was stating that the president really wanted a very different view of foreign policy. His goal was to get the United States out of the Middle East completely. And he felt that he could do that by seeing Iran essentially become a nuclear power. The United States would exit, and they were even boasting about the fact that they were doing everything they could to cut out Israel's legs from under her to make sure that Netanyahu would not preemptively bomb the Iranian nuclear facilities. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. You can't believe that it's this bad. And the president and his, at that time, 30-year-old aide, right, who is effectively the president of the United States when it came to running our foreign policy, in particular, the most dangerous agreement America has ever agreed to, which is this Iran nuclear deal. They made the decision that Iran should have nuclear weapons, and somehow that would allow the United States to exit from the Middle East, thinking that we would not have negative repercussions. It's probably the most foolish, really the most tragic decision I've ever seen, and they wouldn't even allow their handpicked defense cabinet members or Pentagon members or state members to get involved in the decision. Only President Obama and his aide made foreign policy decisions based on their preconceived, tragically flawed ideal, and they refused any intervention or advice from any senior policy analysts that have been around the block. So again, one thing I also want to mention is the president's aide, who is the who was effectively our co-president when it came to foreign policy. He has zero foreign policy background.
None.
He admitted he was a bad student in high school. He was a drinker, a pothead, and spent his time hanging around Central Park.
Well, that
explains
it. No
foreign policy experience. His background was as a fiction writer. And
there you go.
There,
that's all the qualifications you need in this administration. Hey, Michelle, we're up against a break, but quickly, if this admission is true, that they misled the public, the media, that includes Congress, has the administration crossed the line?
Oh, sure they have. The problem is Congress doesn't seem to have enough of a backbone to do anything with this president. When they gave away the power of the purse to the president, they effectively gave away their power.
Yeah,
did Congress do something? You bet. There should be impeachment proceedings brought up against all sorts of people in the administration. Certainly the president should be subject to impeachment. I don't think we're going to see that come from this Congress, but they should.
All right, Michelle, we got to leave it there. Thanks so much for being with us and welcome home.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
You can find out more about Michelle Bachmann when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, North Carolina's Lieutenant Governor joins Tony to talk about their lawsuit against the Obama administration. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. HB 2 in North Carolina is still under a lot of scrutiny. The bill simply states that people must use the restroom facilities of their biological gender, overriding the Charlotte bathroom ordinance, which would have allowed people to choose which restrooms or changing facilities they used. After receiving threats from the federal government regarding federal funding, the state is now fighting back. On Wednesday, Governor Pat McCrory filed a lawsuit against the Obama administration for their, quote, radical reinterpretation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. Our lawsuit seeks to ensure that North Carolina continues to receive federal funding until the courts clarify federal law and resolve this national issue, end quote. Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina Dan Forrest joins Tony with the latest.
Dan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
As always, Tony, it's great to be with you, and thank you for continuing the fight out there.
Well, I want to say thank you to the state of North Carolina, and I want to zero in first on something in your lawsuit or in the statement that the North Carolina administration has made today. This is a national issue. You are drawing attention to the fact that this is not just about North Carolina. This is about the entire country.
Yeah, I mean, you have a radical administration in Washington, D.C. right now using their Justice Department agency to rewrite civil law. I mean, you're talking about years and years worth of law on the books, and they are trying to bypass Congress, bypass the legislative process, and use extortion and bullying tactics to try to change laws in North Carolina, by the way, as you mentioned, which will impact every state in the United States of America.
Now, let me ask you about that. Have you had conversations with other state officials in other states that are taking notice of this and saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, this could happen in our state? In fact, in some instances on the Title IX funding of the Department of Education, it is actually happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you're starting to see states weigh in different ways in your own home state. You know, your attorney general has certainly asked Target to explain itself and how they're going to protect women in their bathrooms. We have had other, I've actually talked to a couple of lieutenant governors. I have another call with a lieutenant governor today who's showing their support, but also kind of wanting to know what's going on so that they can be prepared in their states as well, because, you know, it's kind of coming down. If your listeners don't know or haven't been paying attention, you know, when the Justice Department of the Obama administration comes into the state and says, you know what, unless you do what we tell you to do, we are going to take your tax dollars and take them away from you for education. That's just another bullying tactic. It's kind of a par for the course for this administration in a lot of ways. But this one's a little bit beyond that, because they are actually rewriting civil rights law in doing that.
Lieutenant Governor, now this afternoon, you kind of knocked the Obama administration back on their heels, and they responded by filing their own lawsuit in another jurisdiction in the state of North Carolina. What are they alleging in their suit?
Well, they're alleging in their suit that we are violating Title IX and Title VII by discriminating against a group of people. That's just absolutely not the case. So they came back, you know, I don't know if they're expecting or not expecting us to file a lawsuit, but both our governor and our legislature both filed lawsuits against the Justice Department for this.
Frankly, I don't think they were expecting, and I could be wrong, but from the standpoint of for the last 7.5 years, with the exception of some of the cases on Obamacare, few states have pushed back against this administration, and they are so adept at their bullying tactics that most states, especially when it comes to the strings of the money, simply fold and give exactly what this administration wants.
Yeah, and I think that for this basic right to privacy, for especially for women and children, but for men too, quite frankly, and bathrooms and shower facilities and everything else, a reminder to your listeners what the Charlotte Ordinance would do. If Loretta Lynch has her way and gets what she wants, that would mean the Charlotte Ordinance would be in effect for North Carolina, but for the rest of the country, which would mean you would have to take bathroom signs off of all bathrooms. You'd have to take male and female signs off of showers and changing rooms. There would be no more. Men would be free to walk in those facilities. We're not even talking about the tiny percentage of transgender people in this country.
Right.
You're talking about men with ill intent, or people that have ill intent to be able to walk into those facilities. And not only doing that, Tony, I think it's actually more shameful than that, because what Mrs. Lynch is doing is she is equating this to the civil rights movement. And she made a comment in her statement today where she said she compared, there was a time in America where we had other signs above bathrooms. She's talking about Jim Crow laws in America. So to equate the basic rights of privacy for men and women in this country to Jim Crow laws is really unfathomable.
Quite frankly, it's insane. And I want to pull a quote from their lawsuit that they filed this afternoon, and this is what they said in it. And it shows you how, you know, they want to just say something and make it be, despite what science and biology would say. Here's what they say. Quote, gender identity is innate and external, and external efforts to change a person's gender identity can be harmful to a person's health and well-being. Listen to this. Gender identity and transgender status are inextricably linked to one's sex and are sex-related characteristics, end quote. Now, think through that one. They are moving so quick to push this agenda through, they haven't even thought through their own logic and their own statements.
Now, it was interesting, based on the speed of their move here. I mean, this, again, was last week when this came up, and now they're filing suit against us. There was a reporter in the press conference today with the attorney general who said, what about the Benghazi emails? It's been 4 years since we've heard anything on the Benghazi emails, but you seem to be moving really quickly on this with North Carolina. Why such speed in this when it's taken so long for that? You know, I think those are the kinds of things the American people need to be woken up about, because this is political agenda we're talking about.
Well, it also falls into the category of community organizing. I mean, you know, you can organize in, you know, bathrooms and stuff, but when it comes to keeping the nation safe against ISIS, you know, standing up to Russia and Iran, that's a whole different category, which is beyond the pay grade, I think, of some here in Washington. Let me draw this home or bring this home for so many of our listeners, which I think are getting it in light of what's happened with Target and how they've implemented this policy. In fact, over the weekend, Governor, I had conversations with members of Congress late last week as well about how there needs to immediately be oversight hearings into the Department of Justice and in particular the Department of Education and this redefinition of terms, unilateral redefinition of terms, and these threats that they're using regarding federal dollars. This, you're absolutely right, this is nothing more than bullying and trying, it's extortion, it's blackmail.
And it's not just blackmail. I mean, what they're doing here in North Carolina, especially with our K-12 dollars, is they're saying, okay, we are going to reach in and hurt the least advantaged students in North Carolina, those that need it the most. That's who we're going to hurt the most. And that's how, obviously, how bullies work. But that's what they're doing here in the state. I don't think the people of North Carolina for one second want to tolerate sending their hard-earned tax dollars to Washington, D.C., than to be turned around and extorted by them.
Governor, we're up against a break. One final question. These aggressive tactics by the Obama administration, is this making elected leaders there in North Carolina more resolute in their stand?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, across the board, overwhelming support, not just with the elected leaders, but the public here in North Carolina. And again, I'll just reiterate with you, Tony, that this is a political campaign more than anything. Governor, General Assembly that are coming up in elections in 5.5 months. That's what this is ultimately about here, right now at this time. But it's certainly a position that's not going to go away.
All right. Well, we're going to continue to track it. And we want to thank you and the governor and the legislature there for not giving in to the bullying of the Obama administration. Governor, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Tony. Have a great day.
Well, you can find out more about today's guests when you go to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.